south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Oh, don't you know I get a lot of people sending me emails about Panama. So let's catch up on what's been happening there recently. Now, first let me say that I like Panama, but it's way too hot to live there, for me anyway. And people ask, does it have great beaches? Because it has a Caribbean side and a Pacific side. Well, on the Pacific side, the beaches are pretty much crap. Just like they pretty much are on the rest of the Pacific side through Central America and Mexico, too. Remember that. Pacific side, crap. On a 1 to 10, maybe anywhere from a 3 to a 5. That's all up and down the Pacific coast of Mexico, Central America, and parts of South America. So, of course, land on the Pacific Ocean side is much cheaper than on the Atlantic side. In fact, I can show you dozens of real estate ads right now with beautiful beach houses on crappy, dark sand beaches on the Pacific that are under $100,000 complete. That's beachfront land, house, and pool, too. How about it? Your own oceanfront property for under $100,000. But don't sell your gold or your bitcoins just yet. Because you see, the Pacific Ocean just pounds away on the shore, and there's no such thing as that clear, pristine water that you see on the Caribbean side. And besides that, because you're in volcano country mostly on the Pacific side, unfortunately, not only don't you get white sand, sometimes it's almost black, which means you can't even walk on it. In fact, I can say about 80% of the beaches on the Pacific side of Central America and Mexico, you can skip the part about kicking your shoes off and walking the beach Robinson Crusoe style. So then people say, what about Costa Rica? They've got some nice Pacific Coast beaches, right? Like Capos, Jaco Beach, and Manuel Antonio. Yeah, well, they're still not white sand beaches. By the way, they're not those long, luxurious, picture postcard strips of beach that stretch as far as the eye can see. They're short little strips of sand with scruffy vegetation on the back end. And note, there's no powdery sand beaches on the Pacific coast either. The fine powdery stuff you'll only find on the Atlantic Caribbean side. You know, the usual suspects you see in the travel agent brochures. Roatan, Utila, the Belize Cays, Margarita Island off Venezuela, and some of the islands off Colombia. Of course, you've got the English-speaking Caribbean islands too. They've got those great powdery white sand beaches, you know, Jamaica, Bahamas, Cayman Islands, but we're talking about Latin America here. Remember, it's the expat files living in Latin America, right? Anyway, even on the Caribbean Atlantic side, where you do have white sand beaches, or brownish white sand beaches anyway, that would be from the Yucatan in Mexico all the way down to Panama and parts of South America. Still, when you're on the mainland of Latin America, you don't get that very desirable, almost powdered sugar-style sand beach until you get to the islands. But back to Panama. Like I said, I've never seen a beach in Panama that I'd say is over a 7.5 out of 10. I repeat, you're not going to find a beach that's an 8, 9, or 10 unless you go to the islands. However, there are some exceptions to that rule. Some of the all-inclusive hotels and resorts bring their own sand in. So, if you're at a resort and they've got powdered white sand, they're cheating. However, when people talk about that pure turquoise water and beaches to die for on certain Caribbean beaches, the truth is, in almost all cases, those great beaches only exist in one small sliver of the island. Like, take for example, Utila or Roatan, Honduras. About three-quarters of those islands don't have sand beaches at all. They're hard, dark, gnarly coral rocks. And man, if you walk barefoot on that stuff, you're going to pay for it. And by the way, if you're going to rent or buy or go to a hotel, the prices will always be cut rate on the coral side. And even in Roatan, which does have a strip of beach that I have to say is at least a 9.5. It's one of the most beautiful beaches you'll ever see in your life. That would be a strip on the island that only covers about 5 to 10% of the circumference of the island. And that area, of course, is the high rent area. If you want to buy or build on that beach, you're looking at $500,000 and up. However, when you're talking about the rest of the island, which is absolutely beautiful too, where there is no beach at all, just that coral, like I said, you could probably get a nice lot for, I'd say, $20,000 and up. I'm talking about right on the ocean, and then you're only about maybe 10 minutes away from one of the most beautiful beaches in the world, because the island is small. I'm just digressing a bit as usual because people ask me a lot about beachfront property too. Especially Roatan and Utila because they're still a bit laid back. Anyway, about real estate in general, I can tell you this. The bubble in Latin America is set to pop very soon. In a few minutes, I'll give you some great examples. And I bet you're not hearing any of this stuff up in the States. Now, as far as Panama beaches on the Caribbean side, some of them are almost white sand beaches, but they're not the fine, white, powdered sugar-style beaches you'll find in some of the islands. Oh, and by the way, when people talk about the fine beaches in the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico, nope, they're not pure, powdery, white sand beaches either. Nice, but they're lacking in a few respects, including the fact that they don't get maintained very well. And that's generally because the locals have mucked them up a bit. You see, Latins are born litter bugs. Yep, the world is their dumpster, and for Latin men, it's their urinal, too. So if you're diving or snorkeling there, get ready for the occasional straw, piece of plastic, and Coke can. Now, that's not to say four-star hotels and resorts don't manicure their sand. Sometimes it's beautiful and perfect. However, how can they manage to constantly de-litter that vast ocean area outside their beach? Now, don't get me wrong, that's not to say there's Coke cans and plastic everywhere, but, you know, it is annoying when you're snorkeling or just wading out some feet from the shore and you stick your head in the water and you see a Coke can or a piece of plastic every 10 or 20 feet. So if you're at a mom-and-pop place and not staying at one of those big hotels, it could be a nice white sand beach, but you'll find rocks and scruff growing here and there. In other words, not a very good photo op. However, like expat Eddie says, if the price is right, who cares about a few Cheeto wrappers, popsicle sticks, and the occasional mound of dog poo? Eddie always says, if you want nice, white, manicured sand and pristine waters, you could just walk over to the nearest four-star hotel, order a beer at their poolside lounge, and hang out at their beach. Now, that said, I am a fan of vacationing in those Latin Caribbean islands, Puerto Rico, Cuba, Roatan, Dominican Republic, and San Andres, which is a very nice little island that belongs to Colombia. And believe it or not, that little island has 3 Decameron all-inclusive resorts on it. In fact, about 20 years ago, I stayed in the very first Decameron in existence. It was on San Andres Island. In fact, when I was there, I was told it was formerly a narco kingpin's residence that the state repossessed for back taxes when the guy got bumped off. So that was the first one, and now I believe there are around 60 Decameron resorts worldwide. Don't worry, I'll be giving a Decameron update by popular demand, so stay tuned for that. But where was I? Oh yeah, real estate. Even when the real estate bubble pops, if you can get some cheap real estate, let's say in Dominican Republic, San Andres, Puerto Rico, Roatan, never forget that almost all islands depend heavily on importing things, especially technology. That includes low-tech stuff, too, because most islands just don't have manufacturing. So, even when the real estate bubble bursts, your cost of living will always be much higher than even in the first world. So, if you want to buy a car, a dishwasher, a washing machine, a TV, be prepared to get gouged. That's how corrupt governments, are there any other kind, make the big dough by taxing imports. In fact, I once bought a house on the British island of Montserrat in the Caribbean. That was back in the 80s. And I wanted to get a cheap, small car. Well, at the dealerships, the cars were exactly twice the price of the same car up in the States. So I decided to ship a light new Honda Civic down. That was worth about $6,000 then. Now, it cost me about $1,200 to ship it. And the tax on that car was going to be about 50% of Blue Book, which was another $3,000. And since I happen to know someone in the aduana at customs down there, I slipped him $500 under the table well before I shipped the car down, and guess what? No import taxes. That's how things work in third world countries. So yes, I did take a chance whether he was going to be able to pull that off or not. You can never really count on that, so be prepared to pay double. Even so, I've come to the conclusion that I really never want to ship a car down again. In fact, the only way that's worthwhile is if you got pensionado residency status. You know what that's all about. We spoke about that many times on the show. Then you can ship a car in every 5 years or so without paying duties. However, we're talking about a special case here, so ask your lawyer if you qualify. But remember, almost always you're better off buying a car once down here. But where was I? Oh yeah, Panama. So how much do I know about Panama? Well, I've been there at least 30 times. Lived there for a while too. So let's get you up to date on a few Panama items. And this is a little irritating. It's not going to make you happy, but when you get to Tucumán Airport, now that's the main airport near Panama City, When you get there all happy and smiling, ready to hit the beaches or the casinos, whatever. Though, as you'll probably notice as soon as you get to the airport, the government workers there can be slugs and jerks. Though, upon arrival to a tropical paradise, you're probably not disposed to let that bother you. However, at the end of your trip, on your way out, starting January 1st, 2016, they're going to nail you with a $50 departure tax. That'll make it the highest in Central America, followed by El Salvador with a $40 departure tax, Honduras with a $40 departure tax, Guatemala with a $30 departure tax, and Costa Rica with a $29 departure tax, but that's soon to rise to $60. So then how does Panama justify a $50 departure tax? Well, they say that's because they've just issued a $625 million bond issue for their new Tucumán International Airport expansion project. And they need that like a hole in the head. Have you ever been to that airport? For its size, it's not any more crowded or congested or chaotic than any other large Latin American international airport. But of course, malignancies like government have one purpose but to grow, right? Now, if I was Tucumán Airport's administrator, I'd tell you what I'd do. I'd fire at least half of the employees because most of them are just sitting around on their dead asses in a state of perpetual slow motion. And it's not hard to see that they really don't like their jobs. Probably because day in and day out, they see all these so-called wealthy gringos flying in with their expensive luggage, iPhones, and designer travel gear and such. So anyway, have that $50 cash handy because they don't take cash or credit cards at the airport departure gate. And by the way, that's why they've installed a brand new row of ATM machines, and there's even a little bank teller window within spitting distance. Could that be for clueless gringos who've blown all their dough at the casinos? Could be, because you know, Panama is a world-class casino destination. Oh, and this news might change your mind about moving to Panama. So let me translate and paraphrase this. It says, lack of water in Panama alarms first world entrepreneurs. This article from Panama's biggest newspaper says, the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce has expressed to the president of Panama the willingness of their organization to actively cooperate to achieve the objective of having 100% potable water for everyone in Panama. They've proposed a plan to the government to provide the country with water, get this, 24 hours a day. Whereas now, only first world subdivisions, gated communities, mall projects, and high-end business districts have water service 24 hours a day. Then it goes on to say, it is unacceptable that in a country with enviable economic growth and number 5 in the world out of 200 countries in rainfall, yet fully 60% of Panamanians do not receive water continuously, and worse, 15% of the population does not have intubated water at all. In other words, they have to go down to the river or the municipal tap in the public square, fill their jugs, and haul water home. And yes, that would be polluted water. Then it goes on to say, this serious problem has transcended different governmental organizations and administrations. They do not want to assume the fiscal and political costs. And finally, the article says, although the water problem is very serious, fully 70% of Panama homes and buildings have no modern sewage treatment control. So how do you like that? Where do you think all that gray water and waste goes? Yuck, huh? But most first world visitors don't see any of that. If you've ever been to Panama City, you'll see it's a very modern high-rise kind of town. And if you stay in one of the high-rise hotels, do have a look out the window, past the skyscrapers and nice parts of the city, to those crummy subdivisions in the outlands. Then have a look at the ocean entrance point to the Panama Canal, where all the ships are coming and going. You can't help but notice how filthy and discolored the water is everywhere. Where it stretches out into the ocean, it looks like an ugly bathtub or jacuzzi scum as far as the eye can see. You can't miss it. And you have to say to yourself, why isn't anyone doing something about this? And it's not just the Panama Canal. Every single waterway in Panama is polluted. So definitely, do not drink the tap water and don't drink the bottled water either. So it doesn't matter that Panama has the fifth highest rainfall in the world. Water, water everywhere and not a drop to drink. Now, the following bit about Panama might make a lot of expats happy. It's just a confirmation that the real estate bubble is about ready to burst. So let me paraphrase this from Panama's largest newspaper. It says there's tough competition as hotel price wars accelerate in Panama. Now, let me stop a second and ask you this. Did you even know there was a hotel price war going on in Panama? Does any stateside gringo know that? Just check the prices on the internet and you'll never know there's a hotel price war going on. However, if you're down here face to face, you can get those same rooms for half price. Then the article says, while occupancy rates and average prices of hotels continue to fall, the Panamanian hotel market is still increasing the supply by 1,200 new rooms a year. In fact, the Panamanian Association of Hotels, called APATEL, reports that in the past 5 years, there have been a 209% increase in the number of hotel rooms available in the country. That's a 40% increase year over year. In contrast to the real demand, which is only growing at 5% a year. So none of this makes sense. That's a very stark example of a bubble. Then we have a quote from Sarah Pardo, president of the hotel association, APATEL. She said in an interview with theprensa.com, that's a big daily newspaper down here, she said, we need an emergency plan for the next 24 months, or many hotels will go bankrupt. She says, as we currently have another 30 large hotels under construction and another 25 in the planning, there is a looming crisis. And worse, there are some 1,200 rooms which will become available by early next year, and the following year, and the year after, etc. Then she goes on to say, there are first world four-star hotels that opened only 2 years ago and now have rates of less than $50 a night. It's estimated that the average rate in the capital has fallen by over 40% in the last 2 years because the influx of tourists has not grown. Of the 24,978 hotel rooms in Panama that are registered, 15,000 of them are in the capital city. Then it says, in a recent market study done by the Hotel Association, the only hope is to start an international tourism media campaign directed specifically at the first world, like the program they had that ended in 2012, when the Panama Government Tourist Bureau signed with an advertising agency that placed Panama as a tourist destination in international markets with other countries like Costa Rica, Mexico, Ecuador, and the Dominican Republic. So there you have it, a sure sign that the bubble is about to pop. So as for Panama, looks like in the upcoming year, there's going to be some very cheap package deals going down. So interested in a very cut-rate vacation? Check it out. A nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. And by the way, let me ask you this. If you're interested in Panama real estate as it blows, if you buy, you better plan on living in the place yourself. The question is, with all those vacancies, who are you going to get as a renter? So if you buy, don't count on living on rental income. Okay, enough said about Panama. Let's move on, but stay in the same neighborhood. Now, here's an article that'll shock you. It comes from a Costa Rican daily called La Prensa Libre. Headline, Costa Rica, the next Greece? Now, before I get into this article, and I will paraphrase again, here's one question. How familiar does all of this sound to you? So, here goes. Well, you heard the headline. Will Costa Rica be the next Greece? Governor Otto Guevara unveiled the list of salaries of 22,000 public officials working in the Costa Rican Electric Institute, ICE, I-C-E, as well as the National Power and Light Company of Costa Rica, CNFL. The employment list exposes thousands of ridiculous Costa Rican government salaries, including a chauffeur who doesn't even have a high school education, making $4,000 a month. That's 8 times the average Costa Rican's monthly wage. It also highlights a floral arranger for the Costa Rican government who makes $1,600 a month. That's 400% more than the Costa Rican average monthly wage. And then we have a Costa Rican public accountant and auditor at $11,200 a month. He makes 30 times the average Costa Rican monthly salary. Then they talk about a Costa Rican government human resources assistant. Nope, not the guy in charge, just an assistant making $6,300 a month. 15 times the Costa Rican average monthly salary. Now, it says added to these monthly stipends are other benefits such as 30 days of paid vacation, 24-month 100% severance pay if you get fired or quit. Then it says in parentheses, but no one in Costa Rican government ever gets fired. Then it says Costa Rican government employees get bonuses for redundancy, housing, zoning allowances, and a month's sick leave every year. Then we have this quote from a non-governmental Costa Rican economist. He says, "These economically unsound endemic government policies feeds the predilection of Costa Rican university students, in which 9 out of 10 in a recent survey said they dreamed of being public servants because in addition to privileged wages, they enjoy ever-escalating pensions and job security for life." Now, does any of that sound familiar? I think all of it does, doesn't it? And finally, at the end of this article comes the topper. It says, "The Costa Rican Electric Institute, that's ICE, is in the public pillory over disclosed information relating to its financial statements, which includes, just this last year, losses of tens of millions of dollars in its operations and those of its subsidies, and losses of hundreds of thousands of cell phone customers." Wonder how they managed to do that. Then they go on to report the details of dozens of other ruinous government sweetheart business deals, which only goes to prove the theory that if you really want to fuck something up, let the government do it. But the real question is, when the Costa Rican government finally becomes insolvent, and it will, unlike Greece, they've got no European Economic Community to bail them out. However, and you might have seen this one coming, guess who's doing side deals with the Costa Rican government? China. So let's name the Latin governments the Chinese are in bed with now. That would be Nicaragua over that $50 billion canal deal that'll never go through. Then there's Panama. The fact is, all you have to do is walk around in Panama City in the business district, and you'll see that about 1 in 5 people in a business suit is an Asian. Then you've got the failed state of Venezuela, with China buying up some of their future oil production at fire sale prices. Then you've got the Chinese buying up vast tracts of farmland in Argentina. Well, you get the picture, right? Oh, and how about this, coming out of many a gringo traveler's favorite place, Ecuador. And here we thought, in a little laid-back country like Ecuador, Big Brother could never really make an impact. Well, listen to this. The article's title, "Big Brother Cameras Mandated for Ecuador's Hotels, Motels, Nightclubs," which down here means strip clubs and bordellos, "and business districts." Now, you might know, nearly a year ago, February 2015, Ecuador passed a video surveillance law mandating that nightclubs, bars, cabarets, motels, hotels, and other business establishments must have surveillance systems in place by March 2015. But since most businesses didn't comply, it's been moved up to January 2016. This is Latin America, you know. Everything kind of moves at the speed of government. So then you might say, well, big deal. With Latin governments so lax, how are they going to keep track of all that? Well, guess what? They can do it this time. In that law, it says, in order to receive operating licenses and renewal of licenses, those video surveillance systems must be in place. Now for the dirty details. This policy requires surveillance cameras to be placed in strategic public places, such as hallways, waiting rooms, entrances, exits, parking lots, elevators, gardens, rooftops, etc. And it says that video footage must be archived for 6 months and provided to authorities whenever requested. Moreover, the new rules require businesses employ one security guard for every 50 customers. Non-compliance leads to government's permanent closure of your establishment. Then it goes on to say the encroachment of state surveillance in Ecuador's public life is nothing new. Since 2012, the government has mandated over 55,000 video cameras be placed in local taxis and buses. There are over 2,000 cameras on public streets and roads, and 1,400 to 2,000 cameras in the nation's schools. So, understandably, people and business owners are pissed. Signs have been popping up here and there in Ecuador saying things like, "Big Brother is watching you," and "state-sponsored voyeurism is legal." As one anonymous law professor at an Ecuadorian university says, quote, "Fingerprint scanners in supermarkets in Venezuela, cameras in schools, bars, and motels in Ecuador. They say it's to prevent crime and wrongdoing, and yet those same governments are never accountable for their own corruption." Okay, that said, you have to wonder what's wrong with Ecuador's pinhead legislators when just a year ago, they attempted and nearly passed a law meant to obtain private information about citizens by collecting all internet traffic data in the country as well as the metadata associated with the communications. Then they almost passed a law last year to force owners of internet cafes to record the activity of all their users. Then finally, the article goes on to say that Ecuador's National Intelligence Secretariat, that's CNIN, though not nearly as powerful as the U.S. NSA or Britain's GCHQ, with only an annual budget of $58 million, it has all the first world software capable of spying on social networks, smartphones, tablets, computers, etc., as well as having facial and voice recognition capabilities. And here we all thought of Ecuador as this nice, peace-loving little country with a mostly indigenous population of short, brown, happy mom-and-pop farmers in colorful costumes riding llamas and hauling wood. Big national security threat. A real sophisticated criminal bunch that needs monitoring, right? But then you got the other Ecuadorian 20%. The ones that became lard-ass government busybodies. But what else is new? And finally, here's an email from a disgruntled U.S. businessman. Dear Johnny, I just heard that up here in the States, we can't ask if a prospective job applicant has a criminal record anymore because of the disproportionate amount of African Americans and Hispanics who have been incarcerated. And it's now considered racist to ask such a question. But get this. If they commit a crime while working for you and on the job, you, the employer, are responsible for their acts. Yeah, and the U.S. government doesn't have an intrinsically criminal class in Congress, right? Get me the out of here, Johnny. Thanks for the good work, Dale. Well, Dale, that just about says it all. And on this Thanksgiving weekend, I'd just like to say that collectively, all of us expat gringos down here in Latin America are thankful for many things, but exceedingly thankful for one thing in particular, that we no longer live in the abomination. In fact, when you think about it, all us gringos and expats down here in Latin America are the new pilgrims, aren't we? So why not come on down and join that pilgrimage yourself? Get a head start by coming to my January Latin Insider Seminar. There's still time to sign up. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's 2016 seminar link for details and the sign-up info. Oh, and don't forget to go to www.thenewexpat.com for some really great blogs by our chief blogster and bottle washer, John Galt himself, who you'll be able to meet personally and hang out with when you come down to my expat seminar. Oh, and finally, don't forget to check out my new YouTube channel. If you want some great visuals to go along with the narrative, just check it out. And when you get there, don't forget to subscribe. It is free, you know.
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me, just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!